the Seattle Kitchen Show on Cairo Radio. It's Chef Tom Douglas.
And Jerry Rogero, the chef in a hat.
And Katie O.
So nice to see you all this morning. We are here every Saturday and Sunday playing our tunes, playing our show.
Absolutely.
I listened to us this weekend. We sounded awesome.
Oh, good. At least we pleased one person.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm Tom Douglas. I'm owner of several of Seattle's fine restaurants, including the Dahlia Lounge across the street, our flagship, and then, of course, our newest, this Carlisle Room across from the Paramount Theater. And we also own this little place called the Hot Stove Society, this fun little cooking school, social cooking school that we tape our show in every week. So
it's a great place
welcome.
To be.
And to our entire audience, welcome.
And I'm the proud owner of two restaurants in Seattle, Lule downtown Seattle at the corner of 6th and Union on the bottom of the Sheraton, and Luc in Madison Valley, mm-hmm. little French-American bistro, mm-hmm. which, by the way, coming up on Saturday the 14th of July, Bastille Day. We're closing
Ooh.
The streets.
Bastille
celebrating
Day.
Like it's supposed to be. So come
what
on
do
down.
You say in France?
Mm-hmm.
Is that French, isn't it?
I'm pretty
that is
sure.
French.
Yeah, you're super French right
kinda
now.
That comes from the back of the throat.
You got to know how to pronounce the air.
Mm-hmm.
The air.
Katie O.
Hello, your sidekick on the show. And also moonlighting at Molly Moon's little homemade ice cream shop, celebrating their 10th anniversary this mm-hmm. year.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Who knew?
They've awesome. Been around. They've been doing it.
Speaking of 10th anniversary, I came back from my East Coast family reunion trip in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware, and I had a little Dixie cup of salt and straw, your new competitor on Alaska Airlines.
They are delicious, though. Uh-huh. There are a lot of delicious ice cream choices around Seattle. We're not short of a sweet iced treat.
No,
that
we
is
are
for
not.
Sure.
Which is funny, because 10 years ago, we didn't really celebrate it nearly as much. Molly Moon's kind of put the scoop shop on the map, I
That's
would say.
That's exactly right. There were other places doing salted caramel across the country, mm-hmm. but really here in Seattle, you only had Ben & Jerry's, you maybe had a Haagen-Dazs mm-hmm. Outpost, and then most people were buying their ice cream from the grocery store. So it's interesting to think now how ubiquitous it is to have these kind of artisanal ice cream shops
scoop
all
shops,
around.
Yeah.
Yeah, these scoop shops all around the city, but that was not the case just 10 years ago.
Yeah, and the array of flavor is it's not just vanilla anymore.
No,
well, you know, I
not.
Will say 40 years ago, we had some of the best gelato in the country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was spurred on by our espresso fascination, right?
Right.
Yep.
Because of all the machines coming from Italy, and gelato was a natural mm-hmm. accompaniment. So we had gelato long before other people did, and that was our scoop shop for many years.
And it's one store, Gelatiamo, it's one store you never... We don't really hear too much about it on 4th and
Yeah,
Union.
But I get it delivered when you get Pagliacci, right?
I know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's been around for a long time.
Very
All right.
Nice.
We're going to host a dinner party this week, or you are, I should say, Miss
mm-hmm.
O.
That's right.
And, of course, I'm sure Terry and I get to come over and slave away for you in the kitchen.
Ideally, yes.
Okay, we have a fancy guest coming to that. We're going to share our favorite taste of the week at home and around town. I have one from the boardwalk in Rehoboth Beach. So, you know, and I think this taste, I always like you guys and us and myself to mm-hmm. tell us a taste that somebody in our listening audience could go get if they wanted.
Right. Right.
And I wouldn't think that most people would go to the boardwalk on the beach, but when I was standing in line at Gus and Gus, which is where I get my favorite taste,
mm-hmm.
One of my co-workers was standing in line at Gus and Gus.
Really?
Yes. Yeah.
That is super
the
strange.
The dining room manager at the Dahlia Lounge was there, too, with
well,
her kids.
Look at that.
So who knew? Of course, there were 50 million people in line. Brittany Bartleben, the chef from the Dahlia Bakery, is going to be here to talk blueberries. And, of course, we're going to go toe-to-toe on your Food for Thought tasty trivia quiz.
And you're going to win this week,
Tom?
And
I fully intend on kicking butt this weekend.
I like that.
Because I have tan lines. I don't know if you guys have seen my tan lines. I think, you know, people often think of tan lines being sexy.
That feels unrelated.
Look here. So if you can't see, I put my foot up on the counter,
yeah.
And I wear golf socks when I
golf. I was
going to
say, it looks like you wear anklets or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I understand tan lines are sexy, right?
Mm-hmm, very.
So those of you on the radio who are listening and can't see, I feel sorry for you because this is hot.
So is that what's making you feel like a winner? Is
yeah,
that
exactly.
Okay.
I'm feeling very confident
wanted
today.
To connect that back to the trivia
my
challenge.
My trivia and tan lines.
Very nice.
Okay, ordinary to extraordinary.
Yeah, that's
the audience is speechless.
It's a tough segue from your tan lines to ordinary to extraordinary. But we are going back
I'm just happy I got my foot up to the counter. I got no props for that.
Really nice flexibility. Yeah, yeah. I can tell you've been working out at the gym. Okay. We are going into Ordinary to Extraordinary, and this is where you take some ordinary dishes and make them extraordinary. It looks like we're getting back down to these national food holidays, and one probably near and dear to most people's heart is fried chicken. National Fried Chicken Day is this weekend. If you wanted to make fried chicken, how would you make it extraordinary?
How would I do it? Well, I'd grab a chicken.
Tell me more. Stuff. That doesn't sound extraordinary quite yet.
Oh, we only have 2 minutes. I got to do this.
Hurry up.
Fast. Okay, fried chicken. I would make a blend of cornstarch and rice flour. I'm over AP flour in my fried foods. I like rice flour and cornstarch.
Something a little bit lighter.
It's so much lighter over frying.
And then, I don't know if you know this, but I happen to have a line of spice rubs. So I season my flour with some of my spice rubs. For this particular one, let's do the peri-peri rub because
like
it's got a little kick
spice,
to it.
Yeah.
A little lemon, oregano. And then I take my chicken, I put it in buttermilk, then I dredge it in my flour. I fry it once, I dredge it again if I want extra crispy. After I fry it once, that's how you get that extra crispy crust.
So wait, you fry it first, then you dredge it again?
Yes.
Ooh.
And then you finish it, and you get that big crumb on
it. I've never done the double frying.
It's a good way to die young, is all I'm going to say. if you want to die young, if you want to just die of grease poisoning, double dredge your deep fried foods.
I can think of worse ways to go.
What would be worse?
Well, a lot of things could be worse, but yeah.
Choking
on a piece of steak. Yeah. I'd rather have the fried chicken.
Do you toast your flour?
I don't toast my flour because it gets toasted when I fry it.
Okay.
But I do fry in baking fat and peanut oil. So a little flavored peanut oil.
That's where the double...
No. It only takes for like a 2 cups of peanut oil that you might have in the bottom of a cast iron pan. I put in a tablespoon of bacon fat just for some smoky flavoring.
Yeah, so, of course.
Yeah.
I like it. Fortifying your fats, even when deep frying.
That's a
good one. Because what makes you a better cook than your neighbor? We've talked about this before, right?
Mm-hmm. It's the extra flavor.
It's the layers of flavor. When somebody sits down to your table and you've invited them over with that smirk on your face, knowing that you're going to blow them away with your fried chicken, and you just watch them take a bite, and then they start to think about, what am I tasting? What's going on here?
Is it the secret ingredient love?
Here.
No, it's probably bacon fat.
No, it's the love and the bacon fat.
It is.
It's the rub of love
both
and the
together.
Bacon.
So
Sean is tired of hearing this conversation, so we're going to move on to talking about cream of the crop soft cheeses. Why not? Let's stuff a few jalapenos or something like that. On Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. All right, we are back in the Seattle kitchen. Time to continue our travels through food and wine and beer.
And everything else.
And everything else. We have a lively audience today because we haven't fed them yet. We like to rev them up, get them ravenous until we get them fed. Okay, Katie, we've got some cheeses to talk about here.
Yes.
And they're soft cheeses.
That's
and
right.
We're not talking about triple cremes here because that's a soft cheese.
No,
also.
We're talking about soft, fresh cheeses. The New York Times came out with an article, and we thought it was pretty interesting to talk about some of the cheeses that are pretty well known, and you know you can find them in all grocery stores, but don't get a lot of love. So let's dive right into it. These things that we're talking about are things like cottage cheese, farmer's cheese, pot cheese, mascarpone,
quark.
Cheese curds.
Let's start at the top.
Okay, let's start at the top.
Who likes cottage cheese? Anybody in the audience like cottage cheese? Oh, my God. What do you like about it?
What do you not like about it? What do you not like about cottage cheese?
I don't know. I mean, it's just all curdy and stuff.
Yeah, it's got a nice springy texture.
Is that really what you like about it?
I really love it.
I think it's cottagey.
Would somebody that loves cottage cheese come up to the microphone and tell me why you like cottage cheese while we're getting to the next one in our list? Because I want to go back to cottage cheese.
No one's willing to do this.
Let's have a debate.
It's too much judgment.
Okay,
you've
got to come up to the mic because we can't hear you if you want to talk about it. So what's the next one on the list?
Okay, the next one is farmer's cheese. Farmer's cheese is actually something that I hadn't heard about until reading this article, but apparently, I'll read it for you. It says, essentially cottage cheese before it has been dressed. Farmer's cheese is sometimes hung in cheesecloth or pressed to make a crumbly but solid mass. The American style is salted. Different nations have different versions, like the slightly spongy Mexican queso fresco, which I'm more familiar with.
Right.
But I had never heard of it termed as farmer's cheese.
Well, I kind of like that idea, and that's really, as they said, cottage cheese, but it's been squeezed, so all that wet lava type stuff that gets in between
lava.
The curves.
Yeah.
It might not be quite. Like the dry queso and stuff like that.
Yeah. Something a little bit more crumbly and textural.
All right. Somebody from our audience has decided to defend cottage cheese. Okay. Just pull that microphone right up tight to you there. What's your name?
My name is Kathy.
Hi, Kathy.
Hi.
Hi, Kathy.
So talk right to the mic right up there so people can hear you.
Okay,
so what do you love about cottage cheese, and what am I missing?
Well, I think cottage cheese is a really great thing to bake with.
Uh-huh.
And it adds...
To bake with?
Yes. Well, you know, like when you do your lasagna,
I agree.
Cottage cheese is... it gives it a nice flavor and kind of that gooiness, but it doesn't overpower.
Why don't you just make a bechamel where you melt the cheese and it's creamy and delicious? Is that curd what you're looking for?
Yeah, and it adds another layer to your lasagna. Huh. So it looks cool in there.
Uh-huh.
It tastes cool. It's yummy.
I think it's a good vessel because it's not very strong in flavor. It actually doesn't have much flavor.
Well, that's sort of my point. It doesn't have much flavor.
Well, let's take this back. So to her example, she's saying like a lasagna or a pasta bake.
Right.
And a lot of those recipes will call for a ricotta, for example. And that has equal the amount of flavor as, say, a cottage cheese.
Yeah.
But the curd is a little bit bigger. And so when you bake it, it actually behaves in the way a little bit more like a mozzarella, like a fine diced mozzarella would.
Right.
No. Because a fine diced mozzarella is going to melt and be sticky and stringy and blah, blah, blah. Cottage cheese doesn't melt, does it?
It gets a little melty. I'll make you a pasta bake.
Yeah,
I'm with you.
Right.
I think it's delicious.
And then also, too, it's a nice added flavor to, like, peaches.
Now, wait a second. We just decided it had no flavor.
Well, it does. It does have a flavor. It has
it's like a sweet, milky flavor.
Yeah.
I would say,
depends on if you're going 1% or 2% or 4%, you know.
Yeah.
So I think it's really nice, and actually to get your dairy, you know, when
good
you are
source of protein.
Good source, yes,
so. I'm with Kathy.
Okay, fine.
So I'm with Kathy.
I'm not convinced,
Kathy.
But thank you for trying.
Oh. Okay. Well, you know,
my wife loves it too. I know that.
Try it in your lasagna. It's an amazing addition.
Yeah,
no, of
totally
course.
Is.
Of course.
Well, thank you. Go cottage cheese.
Go cottage.
Pro cottage cheese movement.
Fine.
What's
Tom?
The next one? What's
okay, the next one is quark. You know, this is another one that I got to be honest with you. Haven't seen in a grocery store, but it's essentially the low-fat cottage cheese, farmer cheese, thick sister to the yogurt. And apparently, you can find this a lot in Germany. Have you?
And in England,
you've been to
too.
Germany and England, and have you experienced?
I haven't.
Quark firsthand.
No.
I want to though. Who doesn't want to eat quark?
It's a cool sounding name.
I thought it was a planet outside in Star Wars or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Planet quark.
It
coming up
like,
on your right.
It sounds like. To me, it's like a cut between a creme fraiche and a cottage cheese, which is one is pretty natural bland, very plain, and the other one's a little bit more tanginess to it.
Right.
The quark is right
like
in
Le
between.
Bon, right?
Yeah.
Like that, like the strained, really kind of yogurt cheese.
Yeah,
right. Sounds like
and all these things, as you can tell, are just kind of a take on a different version of the same
thing. Similar,
you know what I mean?
Exactly.
They're all pretty similar. And they say with quark in Russia and Poland, it's often sold soft and pressed into cakes. Of curds. So not dissimilar to
just
the
like
queso fresco that we were just talking about. All right, the next
mascarpone.
One. Mascarpone. Actually, that is on our list.
Mascarpone.
My Italian, not so good. So, Tom, what do you like to do with mascarpone? I know that you have some thoughts around this, some places where it often gets utilized.
Well, like Terry just said, to me it's just a style of almost like sour cream, but thicker, a creme fraiche.
Right.
Mascarpone tastes a lot like creme fraiche.
Except sweeter than creme fraiche. Mascarpone is sweeter than creme fraiche. For some reason,
I think only if you add extra sugar to it.
No. I think originally mascarpone doesn't have quite the tanginess to it that creme fraiche has. It's not quite as strong on the tanginess, but it's definitely in the same spectrum. Yeah,
yeah. I always consider it kind of Italian cream cheese.
Yeah,
I make something for our donuts over at the Dahlia.
Mm-hmm.
We make a little vanilla mascarpone. We just take mascarpone, mix it with vanilla beans, because I like the flavor of vanilla beans over the vanilla extract because it's not as hot. Vanilla extract's about 50% alcohol, right?
It's also a lot more delicate of a flavor.
Yeah, it's a beautiful flavor.
I still think about the vanilla extract tasting we did many years ago and how actually not very fun that was. You think you're going to go into something, you're like, oh, vanilla, that sounds nice. And then it was really just like shots of booze, basically.
I think, speaking of that, maybe we should do a tasting panel next week on vanilla.
All right.
Because lots of people are making ice cream this summer. And it'd be nice to have a little tasting panel on which is the best vanilla to buy because the prices are astoundingly different.
Yeah, absolutely.
From that Nielsen Massey, which is about $30 for I think 8 ounces or 10 ounces.
It feels like a significant jar though, comparatively to like the McCormick's vanilla extract.
I know the jar is heavier.
Yeah,
it's a thicker jar.
Maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's not about the contents.
Yeah, maybe not.
All right, let's get back to cheese. Let's talk about ricotta.
Oh, we only have 30 seconds. Oh. And ricotta to me, Terry, I don't know how, but I like ricotta salata. I like that pressed ricotta. Mm-hmm. Again, we're getting back to more farmer's cheese.
Right.
Where you can take a peeler. You know, it's so hard you can take a peeler. A little bit like Mazithra, right? Mm-hmm. You can take a peeler and just peel it off. And
that's a great idea. It's a great way to use ricotta.
And I like Mazithra a little bit better in that avenue because it's so much saltier. And I love when you're having a nice fresh green salad to get a little bite of that salty cheese.
Yeah, on a final note, beat your cheese curds. We do these at Luc. We fry them just in a little simple batter and serve with harissa.
God. Who knew that Jeffrey
A little bit of Wisconsin.
Serve a little fried cheese
those
curds.
Those are so delicious, though.
I am. My jaw just hit the cutting board. We're talking vintage cookbooks next with one of the biggest admirers of them, Laura Crotty on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Seattle Kitchen Show from the Hot Stove Society here in downtown Seattle. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate it. We're here every Saturday and Sunday, sometimes three times a weekend.
Yeah, we're lucky three times.
That's awesome. Or, of course, you can download a podcast of our show, which is always fun. Are we still the biggest podcast on Cairo?
I mean, I feel like yes is the
thank
answer
you. That was
to that.
Actually, I heard that we're the biggest podcast in the world.
It's huge. In the world. It's
in the world.
Very popular.
It's a little disconcerting because my trainer in the morning has started listening to our podcast.
Aww.
So while I'm like grunting, trying to lift the weight that she's put on the bars, she says, "Now tell me about KDO." Okay.
She's not here right now. I'm trying to do my bench presses.
Yeah, exactly. All right. We're going to cook up with the past here for a minute. Laura Crotty is here. She's a fan of vintage cookbooks, as am I. And she has brought a few of them for us to peruse. Laura, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
And I understand you also have a book that you're shopping right now with agents in New York.
Yes. I have a cookbook that you contributed to, which I'm very grateful for, about vintage cookbooks.
Uh-huh.
It's inspired by my collection of vintage cookbooks. And it's basically plant-based versions of classic desserts. So very excited about it.
What does that mean, plant-based versions of classic?
So
like when you take baked Alaska, say, and you want to make it without eggs?
Right. The whole challenge, I think, with plant-based cooking, which I'm not a vegan, by the way. Just want to make that very clear. Is
just in case we invite you for dinner.
just in case.
She wants a steak.
Steak. It's really hard to cook without eggs.
Uh-huh.
It's very challenging. And I think
to bake without eggs.
To bake.
Yes.
Cook, even cooking. It's just the combination of ingredients I found was very challenging. But it's fun when you can make it taste good.
You just need a nice pump. Just pump everything up.
Oh, with air?
Yeah. Especially baked Alaska. I mean, you definitely. What do you do if you don't have egg white to do meringue? What do you
aquafaba is really cool. Bean juice. You can do a lot with that. You can make a frosting with that. You can really get a good fluff with that, depending on what you're trying to do. I haven't tried baked Alaska, but sounds interesting.
Have you tried meringue?
I've tried to make a meringue. Yeah.
And what's the answer to the end of try?
I'm not happy with the flavor yet. I'm still playing with that. But the whole goal for me is to make it taste like it's not plant-based, just tastes great.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
that's
no, of course.
Challenging. So that's why this book is so small.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I want to get into
moving along.
Some of
what
the,
is it called? Vegan dessert.
Three pages.
No. You know, classic dessert is a classic dessert. That's how
agar,
I heard
agar. So. Agar agar was the first thing you start using to glue everything together. No, that's... It's true. I mean, vegan dessert to me, when I hear vegan dessert, the first thing I think about is mixture of fruits and then something else, you know, and
right.
herbs. But I never think of replacing eggs by something else. That
yeah.
doesn't compute very well because I don't know what to replace eggs with. Eggs are very special. You know, it's like bacon. There's certain
yeah.
things, certain staples that are very hard to replace.
Yeah, but people have been doing it for years.
No, I know.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean it's great.
Boy, I don't know why you're such a hater. I was never.
I knew this was coming.
It is pretty rude.
Kidio, let's take a look at the.
Yeah, what I want to know is not only do you have this book that you're shopping around, which sounds very interesting, but you brought some very special books from your collection here. And one that is actually sitting between us right now, it looks quite antiqued and has a beautiful red binding and gold gilding. What are we seeing here?
Well, I thought I'd bring a couple of special books to start. There's quite a few here, but this one is a tome of recipes, techniques, traditions that mm-hmm. were geared towards running an 18th century English household. So kind of think Downton Abbey
wow.
type thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost 3,000 pages, and it almost looks hand-printed. The pages are kind of crooked. They have these plates in here that are wood engravings that are painted in gold. It's beautiful and interesting. Like she starts off each chapter. She spent a lot of time with meat.
Uh-huh.
So she goes to meat, poultry, fowl, fish, and she'll literally have observations, like a whole chapter on observations.
Mm-hmm.
So she'll go over the cattle and the different types of cattle. This is for people and their homes. Like the shorthorn cow is more flavorful, the meat, than the longhorn, which I never knew that.
And then did you go out and get some shorthorn cattle and really
No, it's more like amusing.
Yeah.
And like, wow, how easy it is to cook for me, to go
yeah.
to the store and everything's done and they tell you exactly what cut it is. And I just can't believe how complicated things must have been.
Now, where did this love of antique cookbooks come from? When did this start for you?
I don't know. I think like most people, I'm just drawn to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're just comforting and more fun to read than anything. And I think the recipes that I'm drawn to are the ones that are somewhat easily adaptable because I have a background in health supportive cooking. So I was always trying to change recipes for people that had ailments and things.
But also, so, I would think as you're going through these, not only are you looking at recipes that are adaptable, but ones that have maybe been lost with time.
Definitely. Yeah, and also the pictures and the graphics.
That's what I love. When I buy books, vintage books, and I don't know what you spent on that book. That's about a 3-inch thick, 5x6 or 7-inch cover. A book like that with the kind of illustrations and graphics in there, you could easily spend $300-$500 on.
And when you asked me how I started, there was an article in the New York Times a long time ago about these great books, and it was written by an architect. And I'm like, ooh, wow, there's a cookbook in it. This one.
That's the one.
That's the one. And I'm like, wow, that sounds so cool. So I started looking at it, and it was really rare, but I'm kind of persistent, and I just kept my eye open over the years. And there was this antique bookstore in London, and they had it, and the price was right, and I grabbed it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's fantastic.
Like 5 years later.
And Sarah, our production assistant, went ahead and took some pictures of it, so we'll be posting that on our Facebook page.
Really, very cool.
So is there a direct correlation to your favorite vintage cookbook and how much you paid for it? Like, to me, there was always something. When I got a book that really struck me, it was super cool. I mean, for me, I was always I had some criteria when I would purchase it. One is first edition. I always like to buy first editions, and the second signed by the author was very important. And the price change is amazing. For example, a La Technique by Jacques Pepin,
mm-hmm.
first edition,
wow.
signed by Jacques, is worth probably close to $500 or $600. Whereas a La Technique just off the internet, unsigned, 20th edition is worth $25.
Right. I think that's really important. If you're collecting for a value, first edition signed, I mean, that's mm-hmm. going to shoot it through the roof, right? But
yeah.
I collect more out of an emotional thing. So if the book is in really good condition, first edition would be ideal. But if I can get a really good copy of it and it's like the fourth printing, it doesn't bother me. Uh-huh. I just want to have it. And I want it to be in good condition more than anything.
Good condition is important.
So I lean more towards an emotional purchase, which isn't good because you end up spending a lot.
The other thing that's super important
to me. It's more expensive that way.
It's more expensive, totally.
I love my used or vintage books to come with notes in the columns.
Mm-hmm. I remember you saying that.
I think that's so awesome.
I keep hitting this microphone. Sorry. I remember you saying that. I thought this was super cool. This is like a, you know, the cover's all yellow and
fabric. What's it called?
A San Francisco cookbook. Mm-hmm. And it's not that old. It's the 70s, but there's a lot of notes, and they kind of make fun of some of the recipes. They talk about what's wrong with them, but the whole book is filled with, and I just love the look of it.
I was going to say, it's a great looking cover.
It's very colorful and fun. And
so, those notes, when they put them right by the recipe, you know they've made the recipe, you know they used the book. A couple of my favorites were Gourmet Magazine had some cookbooks that were more almost travel guides through Europe. And post-World War II, a lot of people took these, and the couple that I have purchased, they took them with them to the hotels that were recommended, the restaurants were recommended, and then made notes about everything in the column. It's really sweet. It's like you take the trip with them.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's also why I love Betty Crocker, also my favorite, is because all the recipes in this book, this one is the new picture cookbook, so more of a later 50s version, but all of the people, they write their little notes over the recipe and they interview people and they just kind of, you're 20 steps ahead of starting it for the first time. You have like all these extra, help, all these little tips that can make you, get it right the first time.
It's a great way to do it. I think, you buy your cookbook, you're not going to be reselling it or whatever. It's like a Bible kind of idea in your kitchen. So you writing the notes on it makes perfect sense to me. I mean, it's like, I made this and that didn't come out as well as I wanted to because I forgot to grease the pan.
These are really
kind of like things like that, and the next time you remember that greasing the pan is very important.
And also, though, looking at these, they're quite joyful. I got to say, the Betty Crocker one that you just showed us has a picture of a turkey, and it has those little almost like chef's hats. I'm not sure what you call those. But yes, on the little turkey legs. Stuff that you remember but haven't seen maybe in a while.
Right.
All right, we're going to take some pictures of these books, and especially the first one that was your favorite, and put them up on our Facebook page so that you can maybe shop online and get your own collection started.
Yeah,
thank you, Laura Crotty.
Good. Yep.
Appreciate that. And I'll look forward to your book when it comes out.
Yeah, I can't wait to see that book out.
What's it called? Vegan?
The little vegan dessert cookbook.
Little vegan dessert cookbook. And
mouthful.
It's based on the classic recipes of American desserts or international desserts or something of the sort.
Yeah.
Up next, Katie O is hosting a dinner party as she often does, but of course she's lazy as could be and does not
want
to
cook. That's right. I don't want
to. So she invites Terry and I to come along for the ride on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show. You're in there with us on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
And I'm Katie O, and it's time to have a dinner party.
Mm-hmm.
And that's right, Tom. I am lazy. I don't feel like cooking. And that's why I'm friends with you and Terry, is so that you can come over and do it on behalf of all the guests.
We would
me
appreciate Terry, I think, if she would to get some air conditioning in her,
in her apartment. This time of the year, it gets squeezy a little bit.
You know, you and me both.
Yeah.
We could all use some
I'm an outdoor cook. I don't mind outdoor cooking.
Okay, all right. Well, the weather is certainly turning. Mm-hmm. We're having kind of some more summer days, which means summer produce. And one of those fabulous things is it's melon season. Mm-hmm. So our secret ingredient for our dinner party is going to be using watermelon in every single course.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yes. I was thinking about how you were talking about all those fresh cheeses earlier. I'm wondering if those are going to make a reappearance. I don't want to plant any seeds. You are the professionals.
Oh,
but
that was a bad pun.
I didn't even know that I punned.
That's even worse.
That's even worse. We are inviting a guest, as we normally do. And because we like to match names with names, John Cougar Mellencamp.
The cougar part.
Put some cougar gold in there. We've done it all.
Yeah.
Who would like to take the appetizer or the beverage?
I'm going to do the beverage. All right. Watermelon juice.
Mm-hmm.
What I like to do is put it in an ice cube tray and then with a little fresh mint in it and then freeze that and then put that in my vodka. I serve as a fresh martini. Just fresh vodka martini, well shaken. Put it into a martini glass and then put those ice cubes of watermelon, you know, not too big of an ice cube of watermelon, and they melt as you drink your martini, and it's delicious. I've had it many times.
Oh, just got goosebumps when Terry said delicious.
If you insist,
I'm not supposed
chef.
To get that, I don't think, with Chef Terry.
And it's
I was just looking at our ice cube trays over there in the gift shop. Because I was thinking, if you buy those little square 1-inch by 1-inch or so ice cube trays.
It's not a bad idea. Maybe
it's a perfect ice cube. Mm-hmm. And you put watermelon juice, it's very easy. You put watermelon in a blender and you blend it and it becomes juice instantly. So, and you don't want to strain it. You want to keep the pulp in there. So you have, you know, the little bit of pulp there is, mm-hmm. It's mostly water, but. So that melts into your martini, and it's very delicious.
There you go.
Delightful.
All right, so I'm going to do the salad then.
Okay.
Since we like to have a salad, and of course, we have been talking about Cougar Gold.
Mm.
So let's take I keep many vintages of Cougar Gold in my refrigerator. I like to have it when it's about 10 years old. So you can see in my garage fridge, there's kind of layers of cans in there, all with a different vintage date, annual. It's a fun little hobby. Anyway, so I'm going to cut up a watermelon, and I'm going to make watermelon pickles with cinnamon oil and sugar and honey and clove.
Tell us more about pickles, pickling watermelon. Well, do you mean the rind?
You take the rind, my mom always made them, so we've had them forever in my household. But you blanch the rind a few times in water to keep draining off the water, and then you finish with a sugar syrup that's flavored with, she always used cinnamon oil and some clove,
mm-hmm.
and then always pack it with a cinnamon stick in the jar.
Yeah.
And
they
can last for years in your fridge. And they don't get worse. They only get better.
Yeah.
But I'm going to take this nice fresh watermelon salad with crumbles of Cougar Gold on top, and then we're going to serve it with little bits of watermelon rind pickle.
Wow. That is just next
level.
That
sounds like John's going to be very excited about this, I think.
Yeah.
His namesake salad dish.
Why not?
This is good.
I think for Maine, I'm going to do him a duck. A duck with some compressed watermelon. So compressed watermelon, you just take a
Nobody has
food
one of
saver. How many of you have a food saver at home? Food
like
saver,
like
anybody?
Said.
No?
Oh, no, he's got a couple of hands in the audience. Uh-huh.
Just suck the air out of the bag and compress the watermelon. And
can you go like this?
You could, but you'd have to do it really strongly.
Okay, I think I just
You
did.
Might choke on it.
And then you speak like that?
Anyway, you take a food saver and you just compress the watermelon and it becomes really hard. Slice it so you have a platform for your duck. Then duck breast, I'm going to cook them on the grill very gently. The coal on the side and the duck breast really in the middle because you don't want to be flaming the whole thing up. And I'm going to slice that duck breast and mix it with a little bit of olive tapenade, some sliced mozzarella right on top of the watermelon, lots of olive oil and fresh basil. Put the duck and the olive tapenade on top of that, and you'll have a wonderful cold main course or room temp, just like a salad idea, but as a main course. And if you want to get fancy, you make a little Bing Cherry.
If you want to get fancy. I love that.
You make a little Bing Cherry vinaigrette.
If that wasn't
vinaigrette.
Fancy enough, you compress watermelon.
What would John Cougar Mellencamp say? Was that fancy, do you think, to John, Mr. Indiana Prairie guy?
I think he would say that's absolutely like my grandma used to make it.
I'm sure that's exactly what he would say.
I mean, the duck in the Midwest and the watermelon. I mean, what else would it? It's very Midwest-like.
Well, it sounds delicious. Tom, how are you going to finish up this dinner?
Ah, boy. Seems like we've done so many things to watermelon except serve it kind of directly.
Yeah.
You know, I guess the salad was pretty direct, but I'm going to make a melon salad or a melon dessert, a fruit cocktail. You know, I don't know if you guys ever had fruit cocktails.
Yes. I like fruit cocktail.
Really?
I love fruit cocktail.
Like when they open the can, kind of?
No.
I was going to say fresh
one.
Fruit cocktail is very specifically from a can.
It is very specifically from a can.
I like to make my own fruit cocktail.
Really? That's what I was suggesting I was going to do this evening.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's what I would expect from you, not a can.
I understand. But I'm not going to make it until I hear Frank and Diane. Until Frank and Diane show up.
You mean Jack?
Jack and Diane show up.
Whoever. Diane and whoever she decides to bring
is
a date.
Diane's really the one I'm interested in.
Okay, so they waltz in the door.
Oh,
and you're like,
now we're going to make a homemade fruit cocktail.
Okay,
and we're going to take chunks of watermelon, chunks of cantaloupe. Because, you know, Mr. Melon Camp likes all kinds of melons.
That's right. Equal melon opportunist.
I agree. So I just had the most beautiful musk melon when I was back at Rehoboth Beach, Delaware last week. Speaking of which, I have to say this. To whoever that nice gentleman was that came to me at the farmer's market in Rehoboth Beach and said, I listen to Seattle Kitchen every week.
Oh.
And he recognized my voice talking to the vendor at the farmer's market.
Well, isn't that
weird? Yeah. Anyway, he was super sweet. And hello to you. Anyway, we're making a melon salad, a little fruit cocktail. We're going to take some of my wife's beautiful brandy cherries that she just made this year with the new crop because we finished all the old ones. And then we're going to put those in because, you know, the fruit cocktail in the can always came with little
maraschino cherries.
Yeah.
And then on top of this, we're going to take, it is summertime, we're going to toast some delicious homemade marshmallows. And you just really put a hard char because I love that kind of melty marshmallow. It's almost, instead
like
of
ambrosia?
Using the char, like ambrosia,
but
we're going to do toasted marshmallow ambrosia salad.
I'm kind of into this.
And
this
then
is
do
like
a little kind of almond crisp on top.
Yeah, this is trashy good. I think you're making something a little bit trashy
well,
that I'd be into.
Frank and Diane, I mean, Jack and Diane.
Frank, who is she bringing?
I don't know. She plays the field. Okay. Strawberry fields.
A can opener.
Wrong guy. Anyway, so yeah, so we're going to have a little toasted marshmallow ambrosia for dessert.
Oh, my goodness. This is, you've really done it this time.
I think so.
Yeah,
I think he's
going to
play a song for us now. Sean, can you make sure that he plays a song for us now? Thank you so much. Up next, stay with us. We have another whole hour here on the Cairo Radio Show, Seattle Kitchen, on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM.
Dribble off those Bobby Brooks, let me do what I please.
Welcome back to the Seattle Kitchen Show. I know that was a long break. We're thrilled that you've stayed with us and are listening. We have another full hour to go, including we're going to talk about Crawford Farm blueberries and all the things you can do with blueberries with Brittany Bartleben, pastry chef at the Dahlia Bakery.
Most beautiful blueberries.
And we're going to do our favorite taste, and we're going to, at the finish of this hour, we're going to go toe-to-toe on our Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge.
That we are.
Of which I have declared myself an early favorite.
Ugh, I love it when you do that. Yeah. Call your shot. Let's see what happens.
You notice I didn't go all the way, because usually when I go all the way with that, I get my butt kicked.
Well, not all the time. Sometimes you bring it.
I said usually.
Usually, though. Yeah. Yes, you're right. It is time.
More times than not.
It is time,
it's
Mr.
okay.
Douglas.
Let him do it. Let him do it, Kenny. It's
though,
okay.
For the taste of the week, you teased us a little bit with your trip to Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. Did I get that right? And then you ran into one of your coworkers in Delaware, which seems very strange. On the boardwalk. So whatever this is, it must be delicious. What did you have?
First, I would say about the boardwalk. Everyone should, in some time in their life, go spend an afternoon on the boardwalk. It is just such a slice of Americana. I don't know if other countries have
boardwalks. What city are we in?
We're in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware, which is about, I will say, 2 hours south of Philadelphia, 2 hours from Baltimore, 2 hours from Washington, D.C. It's most famous probably for, it's where the Nixons summered when they were in the White House. But it's, we've been going there since I was, you know, lived there a long time ago.
Long, long, long ago.
Anyway, so a couple of favorite tastes. I go to this little deli. There's a dude that's twice the size of me and half the height of me. he's the cook at Gus and Gus, and he has this little 4-foot circle that he works between the grill and the little pizza prep unit and the fryer. And he just sits there and sweats all afternoon. And it is that's a humbling sight from a chef perspective of to see him making hot dogs and hamburgers and cheesesteaks and all that kind of stuff and doing it brilliantly with a line the entire time. and just sweating
and just
away.
Nonstop.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they've been at it for 60 years. And so I like Gus and Gus. But I had, like, you know, I went to some pretty fancy places for cheesesteaks, which is what you do back there. And I will say the cheesesteaks in Philadelphia, terrible. Terrible. Got to say. The pork sandwiches, on the other hand, with the greens, delicious. But the ones at Gus and Gus was fabulous because he actually took the time. He has a 4-foot grill that's all he's got. And he must do 500 or 600 covers.
Is it a griddle or a grill?
Griddle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, griddle.
500 or 600 covers a day by himself.
Wow.
And it's awesome. It's awesome to watch.
Wait, so you got a cheesesteak from him? Is that what you ended up getting?
Yeah, we ordered 8 cheesesteaks at one time.
Wow.
And they came up in less than 15 minutes.
That's incredible.
And they were perfect. With everything. Cheesesteak with everything.
I was going to say, what made it perfect? Because I've heard you talk about cheesesteaks before.
First question.
And you are generally not incredibly impressed with the cheesesteaks you get because of the cheese whiz or whatever it happens to be.
Yeah, they don't brown the meat. They put whiz instead of a good provolone.
Uh-huh.
All sorts of things. They don't toast the bun. This guy did it all. And it was terrific and quite enjoyed it. That was my taste of the week.
That's awesome.
We also did, in honor of the Hot Stove Society tasting panel, we did a caramel corn tasting with the three big caramel corn makers at the beach.
And?
Dolly's won. I wasn't expecting it. It was out of left field.
Dolly's, congratulations on your big win.
Beat Fisher's hands down. So.
Let's see. My taste of the week is closer to home, right in my neighborhood. A little restaurant opened called Reckless Noodle. It used to be the Atlantic. Atlantic, RIP, and then came in this new group of little restaurant owners, and they do kind of a mix of Thai and Southeast Asian flavored dishes, but one thing that I always get when I go there is their papaya salad, that green papaya salad, and they do it, I think, really well. Texturally, it's got everything. Here we are, again, the days are getting warmer, so that kind of cool, vinegary, you know, very savory salad, that's just... It's
sounds
unbeatable.
Delicious.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites. That's my taste of the week. Thierry?
Well, for me, I was working on the line at Luc, and the most beautiful thing I got this week was Rainier cherries from Mount Vernon area, from the lady that brings me the eggs, the organic eggs that we buy that are nice and beautiful and pricey, but delicious. they brought me some Rainier cherries, and they handpicked. They were the most beautiful and tasty Rainier cherries I've had in years.
Awesome to say, because I think it's hard to get a great cherry.
Exactly. Rainier cherries especially have a tendency to be either picked before ripeness. They have to be picked, you know, the minute you use them, you have to use them the minute you pick them because they oxidize very fast. And they're not a great, I don't think they're a great cook fruit. You know, I think Bing cherry, they definitely do better cooked. They do well cooked, but Rainier, it's not something that I normally cook. I just ate a bunch of them raw to start, because that's what you do. And then I pickled them in a very light brine with a little bit of chili pepper in it to give it a little spice. I tell you, man, that bucket is hard to stay away from.
How many pounds of cherries did you eat by yourself?
Well, I got a whole flat, and I probably ate at least a half of the flat by myself so far.
Well, I feel sorry for your customers, because you know... In our business,
I'm sorry, we know
what we paid for the fruit, and then we know what we have to sell it for.
I'm going
to
say
And now, because you ate half the flat, you have to sell the other half for twice as much money
to
get your money back.
It's like opening a bottle of wine, and you go, I am not giving this away. It was one of those, oh, man, I don't even know if I want to sell these cherries. I'm keeping them to myself.
Yeah.
That's a bit selfish, but...
I was going to say, in our restaurants, we would always save those for the customers first.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, you're very you're very beautiful, Tom.
Tina, you had a favorite taste of the week also.
Oh, I did. I had two favorite tastes of the week.
Just give me one.
Oh,
That's why they call it the favorite.
Local or not local?
Not local.
All right. I went to a restaurant called June in Brooklyn, New York. Mm-hmm. It's in Cobble Hill, and it is a very quaint, cute little spot, and I had turnips. And I don't normally order turnips, but the way that they cooked them, prepared them, so they didn't cook them, they were raw, but they had turmeric and a little yogurt, minty yogurt, on the bottom. They were beautifully laid out on top. I have a picture I'll put on Facebook.
Just sliced like carpaccio thin?
Yes, really delicious. And the environment and the whole place was really great. I'll put a little link on Facebook.
June too. In
June,
New York. If you're going to Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Highly recommend.
Having just gotten on the airplane, escaping from Philadelphia at 95 degrees with 95% humidity, I wouldn't suggest the East Coast right at the moment.
It was 90 degrees outside. Yeah. And then it rained, so it gets that like sauna in New York. It just feels like you're in a big greenhouse.
And you can just see all the steam coming up off the sidewalks and the streets.
Yeah.
I still loved it. Mm-hmm. You know, there's something kind of magical about New York, no matter what time of year.
No matter what the weather.
Mm-hmm. Right.
All right. Up next, Leslie Kelly, a friend of the show, is off on a food adventure, and we're going to hear all about it on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. We are back in the kitchen. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show here at the Hot Stove Society. Thanks for hanging with us today. We appreciate it. We also are wearing, I am at least, our brand new radio show aprons.
That's right. Very snappy.
Anybody wants a Seattle Kitchen radio show apron? They're $25. And they have an incredibly lifelike drawing of me, Katie O, and Chef Terry. And they're white this time, so we can actually sign them and people can see our signature.
That's true. Yeah. Although we were using that fancy silver Sharpie for a while, but we've moved on.
Anyway, we're very proud of them.
They will be for sale on the somewhere? On
in the
Facebook
gift
page?
Shop.
Yeah, in gift shop.
Yeah, in the gift shop. That's right.
Leslie Kelly has joined us. The woman, I was going to say the woman in red, but it's really the woman in pink. Pink hair, pink scarf.
Pretty in pink.
Pretty in pink.
Mm-hmm.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Leslie, a former reviewer for the food writer for newspapers around the country until newspapers didn't have them anymore. Including Memphis and Spokane and Seattle here at the PI. Mm-hmm. And then also with All Recipes. And you've had many jobs in the food industry, including working in some of our restaurants.
That's
for
right. Secret
a few
shopper.
Minutes. Secret shopper. Yep. We call it shopping for success.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Yes.
So anyway, Leslie, why are you here today? Tell us about your journey that you're going to go on.
Well, Tom and Terry and Katie O and everybody here. Big news. We sold our house in Queen Anne, and we're hitting the road. We're going to go out and explore America and just try something different and crazy and wild. And, you know, most of the time when I tell people this, they have two reactions. They're like, you are my hero, or as Tom Douglas said to me when I told him, you are crazy. What are you thinking?
Well, let's just be clear. You're talking about getting a van like you might do in the 1960s and putting a mattress in the back with your husband and then doing it. It's not like you have some fancy RV you're traveling the country
well,
in. Because I would do that in a heartbeat.
Okay.
But let's just be clear about the accommodations.
We've been shopping. We've looked at a lot of vehicles. We've looked at the fancy Mercedes Sprinter camper or conversion vans.
I've seen those. I could live in that.
Those are cool. They're also $130,000.
So
yeah,
pay up.
Can I borrow some of that from you, buddy? And
that's a couple of weeks at a Ritz-Carlton. You can do this.
Then we've looked at these big Class C RVs, and they are super comfy, but they kind of drive like a bus, and every bump you hit, you're just like clunk, clunk, clunk down the road. What's surprising is those big vehicles actually get better gas mileage than the vans because the motors are more appropriate. I'm learning about crazy things that I never thought I'd learn about, like torque and like what?
RPM.
RPM. So we keep coming back to this one vehicle. It's a camper conversion that's made right here in Seattle. It's a Nissan NV200 that is, you know, it gets incredible gas mileage, and it would be very tight, and we would basically be camping, but it would be forcing us out into the world and into nature. And of course we're going to stop at the Ritz-Carlton along the way because, you know, you can't be in this vehicle all the time.
Obviously save your money for nights at the Ritz.
And the price tag is like, you know, $30,000. So it's affordable, gets great gas mileage. I don't know. We're trying it out next week. We're taking a trip to Bend, Oregon in this vehicle. It's called the Free Bird. So peace out, mm-hmm. and you know, we'll see what happens. But part of our goal is to visit as many national parks as possible. Our big kickoff trip. We're going to take off out of Missoula, Montana, after a Pearl Jam concert in August, and we're driving to Alaska.
Okay, so. But here we are on a food show, Leslie Kelly, so I got to
yeah,
know.
Yeah, me too. I was like,
What are you going to eat while you are traveling across the United States?
Okay, so goals for this mission is to seek out the coolest regional food and then try to recreate that in my teeny tiny kitchen setup. Like, it can be done. Actually, I was approached by this producer I know last week to pitch a cooking show for a media company in Lexington, Kentucky. How random and crazy, but how, you know, stranger things have happened. So definitely, you know, it's going to be a challenge to figure out how to cook mm-hmm. in a teeny tiny vehicle. But tiny kitchens, they're super trendy right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, right? I know how to do this.
One thing I like about this kind of traveling is also you're parking in a park. They usually have a fire. They have a grill.
Right.
I mean, you can do a lot of things on the outdoor.
You can definitely do a lot of things. And one thing that I am going to take in my kitchen arsenal is my beloved Lodge cast iron grill pan.
Absolutely.
So I recently, we were up doing a hot springs tour in BC in one of these big classy RVs, and I made a pizza in my cast iron skillet,
yeah.
and it came out really well.
Beautifully.
So,
yeah. There's a reason why those things hang out forever. And you're not Johnny Appleseeding this, so you don't have to carry it on your back.
No.
Which is the benefit.
We have bins. We are trying to get organized.
So
you're
going
to have a refrigeration unit in that van?
There is a refrigerator drawer, but, you know, we'll see. Anyway,
Leslie, you travel a lot, and I know specifically down south you're very familiar with Memphis barbecue and all that good stuff. But is there a regional cuisine as you're going to be on your travels that you haven't tried that you're very much looking forward to?
Well, we're planning to spend most of the month of December exploring California, I'm a native Californian. I was born in the Bay Area. And
that explains so much to me now.
She's reliving the 70s.
So I want to, you know, get into some of the little tiny places that aren't necessarily explored. So one thing, you mentioned the South, KDO, and mm-hmm. I brought a little something for Tom Douglas from the South. I want him to open it. I'm not going to be here for his birthday. He's turning 60 in August. I you know.
How do you know that?
Aren't we Facebook friends? So I got him a little gift to thank him for all the wonderful support and enthusiasm and friendship over the years. And
You just said you were crazy to go on this trip.
Ooh, yeah, whatever. Yep.
What do we have here?
So this is from the Rendezvous, and Tom and I have
Memphis,
had many...
Memphis, Tennessee.
Memphis, Tennessee. Tom and I have had many conversations about the lamb ribs at the Rendezvous, and mm-hmm. these are them. They don't usually ship them out, but I talked him into it, and happy birthday, Tom.
Thank you. That is unbelievable. The lamb ribs at the Rendezvous, you know, you often talk about places that you'll make a special trip just for a dish. Robert Apple always did that. And this is a trip I would make to Memphis just for these ribs. So you saved me a trip.
Okay. Well, let's meet up there someday.
Exactly.
What do you say?
When are you going to be in
Seattle
Alaska,
Kitchen Gang?
Yes, we will come find you wherever you are.
We can stay at the Peabody, or we can stay in your van. You choose.
Slumber party.
You can wash the duck at 5 o'clock,
I'm definitely. We are writing about this for the Spokesman Review, our old newspaper. You can follow along our grand tour on Instagram. Thank you all for having me.
Well, it's been
great
nice.
Pleasure.
We look forward to maybe checking in once a month with you.
Sounds good.
We'll come on the show and. We'll send you little packages along the way, little goodies to keep you interested in returning to Seattle. But you'll have to give us like a post office box that we can...
General delivery.
General delivery to the red camper on the left of the fountain.
At post number 17. Have a wonderful trip.
Up next, Chef Brittany Bartleben is going to be here and reveal what makes Crawford blueberries so delicious. Thank you, Leslie Kelly, on Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Seattle Kitchen. I am here with the chef in the chapeau, Katie O, and of course, I'm Tom Douglas, and we have chef, pastry queen, bee, whatever you like to call yourself today. We'll call her birthday girl.
Yeah. Happy birthday to you.
You have to do it in French. You have to do it in French.
Joyeux anniversaire. Joyeux anniversaire, Brittany. Joyeux anniversaire.
Yay. Aww. Thank you.
All right.
I'm more of the Stevie Wonder guy. Happy birthday.
Hey.
Yeah, you wouldn't want me singing in any language.
No, we really enjoyed that just right then.
Chef Brittany, it is blueberry time.
It is blueberry
And our friends from Prosser, Washington, the Crawford family, has a large farm over there. They grow, I would say 75% of their crop is grapes. But they also have a huge crop of blueberries, of which we get to partake in every year. And what else do we? Oh, they do some sweet corn.
Yep, and of course asparagus.
Asparagus. I knew that we had some other stuff. But anyway, tell us about blueberry time and what you look forward to from the Crawford Farm blueberries.
Well, Crawford Farm blueberries, they kind of have this cult following within our company, at least, because we look forward to it all year long. We buy thousands of pounds of them and freeze them. They are different. They're sweeter. They have the most true blueberry flavor.
I was going to say,
yes.
They taste almost like if fake. You were, a blueberry flavor, this is that flavor.
Yes.
Very good.
And this is the early, they're just starting to harvest them, so they're more like a regular size blueberry. But in about a month, they will grow to the size of a quarter.
Yeah.
And like it'll be a meal in one blueberry. They are incredible.
I love the acid balance.
Yes, they have that perfect tart, sweet balance. That
I've been lucky to go to the farm too. And I think it's fascinating to see how many type of blueberry there are.
I know. Usually we just get containers that say blueberries on them, but every once in a while they'll have the varietal, and the Chandlers are the ones we look forward to every year. Those are the ones that get crazy huge and will fill a tablespoon. Mm-hmm. But they also, they have this this firmness to them as well. They don't get mushy, and they just burst in your mouth, and they're just amazing.
Yeah.
I'll do this. You know, we have never done this before, so hopefully it works out, but since Crawford Farm blueberries are not necessarily available to everybody, and we bring them over on our refrigerated truck, if you go to dahliabakery.com, you are welcome to order a flat or a half a flat.
Yes.
Do they come in flat?
They're actually in 13-ounce containers. Large clamshells.
Right. Yeah, clamshells.
So you're welcome to order them from the Dahlia Bakery.
Yep.
I'll arrange that.
Yep.
And pick them up at the Dahlia Bakery if you want to try.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
So I'm not sure what the price is going to be. We'll see what they come in at because they change during the season.
They do.
But they're certainly going to be reasonable.
Yes.
And we will set aside on our next delivery. We'll set aside for you to pick
absolutely.
Those up.
Absolutely,
okay. And totally worth it. I mean, oftentimes we get really excited about local strawberry season, and blueberries are something that are around year round now. But when they come from Washington, when they come specifically from this farm, they are just really so much better than. Oftentimes, what you're able
I
to
really
get
don't even bother with blueberries unless it's blueberry season. And now Crawford, they've just ruined me for all of their blueberries.
So all that said and done, we have many different types of blueberry. What do you do with blueberries?
What's your favorite way to eat them? You can't beat a blueberry muffin. Just a perfect blueberry muffin. Just I absolutely love blueberry pie. Just unadulterated blueberry pie is, I know a lot of people like to do blends, but I love to do it on its own. I like to make a cheesecake ice cream and make a blueberry compote and then swirl the blueberry compote into the cheesecake ice cream as I'm pulling off the mixer or off the ice cream machine. That's really delicious.
Blueberries make an incredible jam because you don't have to add a lot of sugar to them.
I was just heading down the Mazurka bar route.
Yep, exactly.
You love these Mazurka bars.
I do love a good trashy Mazurka bar. They're just trashy, greasy, buttery, sugary.
Simple. Yeah.
And let's go over that Mazurka bar again, specifically with blueberries since that's what we're chatting about.
So first you're going to make a blueberry jam, which you don't need to do much to them other than cook them down. Maybe add, say for 6 cups of blueberries, you're just going to add like 2 tablespoons of sugar and just... maybe a teaspoon of pectin, little salt if you want, and a little lemon juice.
Yep. Can you use freezer jam in that?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Because that's uncooked. I prefer freezer jam.
And then you're just going to make an oat streusel. So that's oats, brown sugar, white sugar, some spices, salt, and a little flour. And you're going to add some...
And butter.
And I was getting there.
You can't just say some spices. You have to give up some of your tricks.
Some people like different spices in their streusel. For instance, summertime, I only like to add a little bit of cinnamon. In the winter, I like to pull out, you know, the cardamom and the allspice and all...
That
marry well with... apples and things like that. But summertime, I like to let the summer fruit be the star of the show. So anyway, then you're just going to add some cold butter and mix it in your standing mixer. You can even do it by hand with a pastry cutter until the whole mixture is crumbly. And then you're going to take half of that and just pat it into a pan. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to smear your jam
over that.
Just
like a regular 9x13.
Yeah. Smear your jam over that, and then crumble the rest of your streusel over that, and then bake it until it's just all bubbly and fantastic. And
now, so often in this scenario, people don't bake it long enough for me.
Right.
Oh, you got to go dark.
There's so much butter. I don't know why they're scared.
A very, very long, long baking.
Yes. I think one of the greatest sins is underbaking a Mazurka bar, because you're just going to get this puddle of butter. Right. And you want to let everything caramelize.
Yeah, what kind of color are you looking for? Like a
Dark.
Dark.
Yes.
I mean, not as dark as Katie's hair.
This is more like... midnight.
That's fast.
Let's say
that's over the top.
Yeah. Hazelnut. Perfect. Yeah. Perfect. There we go. Yeah. Yeah.
Like Terry's famous
Beurre noisette.
Beurre noisette.
Yeah.
Can we go back to the muffin?
Can you start with hazelnut butter?
Oh, well, there you go.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. When you brown the butter first?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Absolutely.
All right, we can go back to the muffin now.
Let's go back to muffins because I think a lot of people do have a soft spot in their heart for delicious...
It's my favorite.
...blueberry muffin.
Yes.
What is the key to maintaining a really strong blueberry flavor within that process?
I have
a little secret.
So I add the blueberries to my muffin batter, of course, and then I scoop it. And then I take a little bit of blueberry jam and put it in a piping bag and then squirt it into the center of the muffin before it gets baked.
That's the key.
And that just permeates the entire muffin with really strong
blueberry flavor. But just like any other product, I think if you get those good blueberries...
Yes.
This is the difference between a blah muffin and a delicious muffin.
That is very true. Yeah. And unlike strawberries, I just absolutely love blueberries when they've been cooked. I do think it enhances the
fruit. I'm with you.
Yes.
Strawberry, I don't cook. Yeah. I macerate, and that's the food that I go.
Yeah.
What? What are you thinking about?
Well, I'm not the biggest cooked blueberry fan. Like, I don't like blueberry pancakes. I like blueberry muffins generally with maybe a dried blueberry in it, because I don't like that kind of mushy bite that you get.
Oh, yeah, cooked fruit bite.
It's just me.
I'm a pie?
Weird that way. I do like the pie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do like the pie. Yeah. But I often like the pie. It's often too... people don't use the right thickening agent on the
right
level on it, and so it's often soupy, and I don't like that.
Yeah, it's a fine
balance. I would rather have an overstarched blueberry pie or any sort of fruit pie that doesn't run out of the pie.
And I must say, those blueberries make a great ice cream.
Yes, they
just
really
plain
do.
Plain ice cream.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
It feels like the key takeaway that I'm learning from you, Brittany, is that if you are, whether or not you're getting the blueberries from Crawford Farms and ordering it from the Dally Bakery, or you're going to go to a farm and do a U-pick, because I know a lot of families like to do that.
Yes.
That oftentimes you have this surplus after you've made the pie and after you've made the muffins to just make a bunch of jam, since it seems like that is fortifying a lot of these desserts.
It really is. I will also say that blueberries freeze better than any fruit, I think. Mm-hmm. They've got that skin protecting them. And so you know how you have to IQF, individually quick freeze? You don't necessarily have to do that with a blueberry.
Blueberries are a little bit more forgiving.
Yeah, they're a little drier, and so they don't clump together the way a raspberry or a strawberry would. Mm. So, if you're sitting on too much blueberries, throw them in your freezer and use them in your blueberry pancakes, not for Tom, obviously, but throughout the year. Yeah. Yeah.
And a coffee cake.
And coffee cake, absolutely.
Love blueberry coffee cake. Yeah. So. All right. We have to wrap up with Brittany Bartlevin, but we do have a little contest coming up in the next segment. Mm-hmm. And we do know your competitive spirit, and we do know it's your birthday.
Yeah.
So, I mean, not that we're going to throw anything. Would you like to join us?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes.
Good. Right. Coming up next, Food for Thought Tasty Trivia on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Seattle Kitchen Show.
I'm Terry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
And also audience motivator.
That's right.
And Katie O and Tom D.
Mm-hmm.
And Chef Brittany Bartlevin from the Dahlia Pastry Kitchen is here to celebrate her birthday.
Yes.
My food trivia.
I was just going to say something like, with a loss, but...
That's awfully rude. That's awfully rude on someone's special day, but...
We'll see.
Yeah, that's that competitive spirit that Tom just cannot let go of, regardless of what's happening.
Right. I'm still eating blueberries.
That's right. This is Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge. This is where the three of you go toe-to-toe in some food trivia. Each of you are going to receive 5 questions, and whoever gets the most correct wins, and whoever gets the least amount correct, as you all well know, have to give something to one of our listeners. And today we actually had a very brave audience member, Kathy, come up here and go toe-to-toe with Tom Douglas on the glory that is cottage cheese. Tom was hard to convince.
He's still very hard to convince.
He's still not totally convinced.
Such a controversial.
But you know what?
That was a fraud on the show.
It is a controversial ingredient. But Kathy, for your bravery, we're going to play for you today. Terry, if you lose...
Totally won, by the way, which kind of bugged me that she kind of stuck with it.
Well, she's going to win twice now.
Yeah.
Because no matter what, one of you is going to lose.
she was really not afraid of you, which was very nice.
Well, what's worse is she wasn't afraid of cottage cheese, which I find kind of...
How dare you? How dare you speak ill of
cottage
cheese?
How dare you?
All right. Terry, what are you going to give away if you lose?
Well, Bastille Day is coming up, and we have this beautiful fiesta going on at Luke. So Saturday, July 14th, if you're available for 2 people, come on in.
All right. Fun.
She's waving her hands like it's she's available. All right, Tom, what if you
lose? You can stop and get food at the Dahlia Bakery to bring with you.
Yes. Yeah.
What will you give away if you lose, Tom?
Let's think. There's so
we
many.
Are thinking,
you want to think
Tom?
Together?
How about some bentos at Tanaka-san?
Ooh,
bentos
that's nice.
For 4.
Bento for
wow.
4.
Yay!
Yay! She's excited again. All right, Brittany, what if you lose today?
I'm going to give a copy of the Dahlia Bakery cookbook as well as a gift certificate to the Dahlia Bakery.
Oh, nice.
Maybe something for in blueberry.
Yes, exactly.
Blueberry
muffins.
There we go. That's the ticket. All right, Terry Rotiro, you enjoy going first. Are you ready?
Go ahead.
All right, your first question. Star anise, clove, fennel, cassia, and Sichuan pepper make up which spice blend?
Allspice?
That is incorrect, sir. It's Chinese five spice. Chinese five spice. All right. Your next question.
No, that was the first thing. Allspice.
You've got 4 more chances here.
Yeah.
Which food is not high in beneficial antioxidants? Is it dark chocolate, white flour, or blueberries? Which one is
it?
Which one could it be?
I'm going to go with the white flour.
That is correct. Very nice. And your third question. When added to fresh fruit before it is frozen, what can improve the texture of the fruit when it is eventually used or thawed, as this might imply?
Well, there is 2 train of thoughts here. So water is my first thing for ice covering.
Interesting.
And sugar would be the other one. So I'm going to go with water.
It was your second guess that was actually correct, a sugar or a sugar syrup.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because water does the same thing. It doesn't actually impair the flavor. It actually keeps it neutral. So I don't want to argue this, but...
We were simply talking about texture.
It was about texture, Chef.
Sorry, Chef.
Hey, it's okay.
Okay. Fourth question. Which chicken is generally more flavorful? Is it a broiler fryer or a roaster?
I'm going to go with the wrong one, roaster.
A roaster. That is correct. Very nice. And your final question, the milk from which breed of cow contains the most protein, minerals, vitamins, and fat? Is that Jersey, Holstein, or Hereford?
I'm going to go with Jersey.
Jersey is correct. Very nice. That's 3 out of 5, Mr. Rofro. Mm. Not too bad.
That was freaky good right there.
That was pretty freaky good.
Freaky good.
All right, wow. Your competitors. Are you nervous, birthday girl?
Yeah,
I am.
barely so confident. Okay.
She's much older and wiser.
Yes,
today.
Exactly.
She used to say, oh, I'm going to beat you guys.
You've learned so much. You've learned so much this past year. All right, Brittany, your first question. Which is not an ingredient in baba ganoush? Is it eggplant, sesame seeds, or chickpeas?
Chickpeas.
That is correct. True or false?
You're a baker. You're not supposed to know
I know. I'm not
that.
Supposed to know those things.
It was a little savory for you. Let's see if you get this next one correct. Soaking onions or garlic in cold water will make the removal of their skins easier. Is that true or false?
True.
That is correct. Your third question. Tripe is made from the lining of what animal organ?
Stomach?
Yes.
Yeah, stomach? Yes.
That is correct. Stomach is correct. You're doing great.
No, I beat Terry. We're tied with Terry.
Your fourth question. What color are coffee beans when they are first picked?
They're like whitish green, right? White?
She's looking for him.
Is this the pink cow thing? Reddish, reddish green, blue.
I'm going to say green.
Green is correct. Very nice. And your last question, possibly for a perfect score, which would be great for your birthday. Big birthday win. What was the original reasoning behind beginning the American school year in September and ending it in June? What was the original reasoning?
I know.
You want to be off for the summertime. I don't know. That sounds accurate, right? Mm-hmm, you want to be off for the summer.
Anything else about that summertime? What happens in the summertime?
4th of July. My birthday.
Cheap labor,
Cheap labor, maybe.
Cheap labor. Yeah, kids can help on the farm for the harvest.
Very
that was your birthday present,
that was
right?
Yeah. Thanks, Tom.
Happy birthday. 5 out of 5.
5 out of 5. A perfect score.
Oh, it's been a while since I've had a perfect score.
All right,
I've ever
Tom.
Had one.
You talked a lot of trash. Now,
well,
now,
I just...
I mean, that's
I
your
had
own
to
fault.
Put a lifeline out
that's
for Miss
right.
Brittany there.
That's very kind of you. Very generous. Tom, what are beluga, ocetra, and savruga?
Whales? No, just kidding.
No, you know. This is a food quiz.
They are caviar.
That is correct. Yeah. Delicious caviars.
From the sturgeon.
Mm-hmm. True or false, soybeans contain all 20 amino acids and are therefore
absolutely.
A complete protein. Is that true
sure.
or false?
Yes.
No, it's false, Tom.
What do I know about soybeans? Yeah, tofu. Like
apparently nothing.
Tofu is what I know.
You definitely don't know until they answer the
question. Tofu of soy protein.
Okay. I just love when you're so sure. Yes.
That's
not
correct.
Even finished.
All right, Tom, your third question. Which of these flowers is not edible? Is it rose, nasturtium, or sweet pea?
Sweet pea.
That is correct. Very nice. All right. Fourth question. Between 1900 and 1964, world's sugar production increased by what degree? Twofold, fivefold, or sevenfold?
Sevenfold.
That is correct. All right, let's see if you can beat
Mr.
Rotaro.
What is so funny, Mr. Rotaro?
Sevenfold. Everybody knows that.
If all else fails, be loud and dogmatic.
I'm with you.
All right, Tom, your last question. The extract from which substance is a meat tenderizer? Cork, juniper berry, or papaya?
Papaya.
Very nice. That is correct. That means you get 4 out of 5. That means today, Terry Rotaro, you are
inviting
loser. Kathy
mm-hmm. to Bastille Day.
Very nice.
If you'd like to go to Bastille Day or win one of these spectacular prizes, you can send us a note on Facebook or Twitter at Seattle Kitchen because you're listening to us on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. The show is produced by Tina Noel at Large Media. Our associate producer is Sarah Leibovitz, and our sound engineer is Sean Don't Call Me Del Torre. If you'd like to be part of our studio audience, go to hotstovesociety.com and buy tickets for only $15. Remember, if you miss any episode of Seattle Kitchen, you can subscribe to our podcast through Stitcher, Apple, or download the Cairo Radio app and search for Seattle Kitchen.
Thanks for listening.
Have a great weekend.